Good afternoon, everyone. This is Rajiv Escana for immigration.com, Law Office of Rajiv Escana, PC. This call is being recorded today, November 17, 2011. If you do not wish your voice to be recorded, you can hang up or not talk at all. The call will be made publicly available, so you may want to protect your identity. By participating in this call, you do not hire us as lawyers, nor do we become your, lawyers. So this is merely a voluntary participation call for information purposes only. It does not create attorney-client relationship. Before I get started, I want to address, we have 2 minutes to two, so I want to address one very common issue that comes up. When can I file an EB2 case instead of an EB3 case? People ask me this question many times, okay? First of all, I'm going to take example of Indian degrees because they are the most common problem. Most European degrees equate to be equivalent to U.S. degrees, but Indian degrees and Pakistani degrees often create a lot of problems. Here is how it works. If you want to file a case under EB2, your job must require a master's degree plus experience or bachelor's plus 5 years of experience. MS plus, well, actually only MS is enough, but MS or bachelor's plus 5, that should be the minimum requirement for the job. It can be more, it cannot be less. The problem begins with degrees. What if I have a 3-year degree? Can I get EB2? Very, very difficult. Almost impossible. I wouldn't say absolutely impossible, but almost impossible. Okay, so there is some exception for people who are exceptionally qualified, even though they have a 3-year degree, if they have 10 years of experience and highly, highly exceptional qualifications, they might be able to make it under EB2. Okay, so 3-year degrees alone will never make it. 3-year degrees with a postgraduate diploma combined will never make it in EB3. Why? For EB3, we always require 1 4-year degree. 1 4-year degree. You cannot combine degrees for EB3. Once again, you cannot combine degrees. Then comes the next one. What if I have a 3+2 combo? 3 years bachelor's, 2 years master's. Can I qualify for EB2? Can I qualify for EB3? Once again, interestingly enough, you cannot qualify for EB3 because you're trying to combine degrees. 3+2 combo cannot do EB3, but you might qualify for EB2. How? If the 3+2 is in the same field, 3 years computer science, bachelor's degree, 2 years master's degree in computer science, and you have 5 years of experience after your master's and your job requires that, then the 3+2 combo, which is a 5-year degree, becomes, the 3+2 combo, the 5-year degree, becomes a equivalent to a bachelor's degree for EB2 purposes. So the weird thing is, you get EB2, but you don't get EB3 with the same qualifications. That's the weird thing. So once again, 3-year degree alone, never an EB2 possible. 3+1 postgraduate diploma with 5 years of experience may be very, very rarely EB2 possible. 3+2 combo. EB3, based upon degree alone, no. But EB3 based upon bachelor's plus 5, maybe, if the 3 and the 2 are in the same field. I know I'm going a little fast, but if there are people who have these questions, maybe we'll follow it up and clarify it further. I had invited some people to participate who had posted on immigration.com. I'm not sure how many people did show up here. Okay, so then comes another combo, which is very common, 3+3. We have a 3-year computer science degree and a 3-year MCA, okay? Do I qualify for EB2? Yes, you do, okay? If the MCA is from a university, you qualify for an EB2. Once again, I'm going to run through it very quickly. 3-year degree, based upon degree alone, you don't qualify for EB3, you don't qualify for EB2. But remember, EB3 requirements are very interesting. They only require 2 years of experience. So if you had no college degree and just 2 years of experience, you would still qualify for EB3, okay? So 3-year bachelor's degree, you can never get EB2, and based upon degree alone, you cannot get EB3. 3-year degree plus postgraduate diploma. Remember postgraduate diploma. If diploma is available even after high school, that doesn't even count. If a diploma is definitely postgraduate diploma, it may get you an EB2 with 5 years of experience. May. It's a big may, okay? Then 3+2 combo, you should be able to get EB2 if you have 5 years of experience, but you will not get EB3 based upon education alone. 3+3 combo, you will almost certainly have no problem getting EB2 based upon your degrees alone, as long as they're in the same field, and 3-year degree, MCA, is from a university. That's the typical pattern we have seen. People who have CPAs or CA from India, company secretaries, all these kind of folks who have training instead of education, Administrative Appeals Unit of USCIS has refused to recognize them as degrees. So CA is not considered to be a degree. Cost accountancy, company secretaries, is not considered to be a degree. All India Institute of Engineers is not considered to be a degree. Keep this in mind. It's a complicated topic, okay? But that's, I've given you a nutshell. And, of course, we have a lot of material on this on our website, immigration.com. That said, I'm going to get into the questions that have been posted. A lot of you today are first-time callers. This is how we'll do it. I will first answer the questions that have been posted on immigration portal forums, immigration.com forums. Then I will ask for people who have posted questions if they have any follow-up questions. After I'm done with that, I will answer new questions or any other questions, okay? Now, it sounds like it can't be done in the hour that we have, but don't worry. I am quite a pro at this. I'm pretty sure we should be able to finish everybody's questions within an hour, okay? Let's start. First question that has been posted is from Sonal. Sonal wanted to know, what do we do? My husband came here, and in 2000, he doesn't have an I-94, so obviously he's unlawfully present. He's got his business. They've got children. Is there anything we can do? Well, ma'am, at this point, I cannot think of anything. I cannot think of anything, okay? I would be certainly happy to do a consultation for you and go over your case in detail. I personally don't see, under the current law, any good way of getting your husband in. You might, because you had a student visa. And I'm assuming that your I-94 does not expire on any particular date. It says DS. DS I-94s usually keep you away from the 3 and the 10-year bar, which would be a problem for your husband. He will have a 10-year bar. Okay? So even with U.S. children, that may not be much of help for us, but we can evaluate the case and see if there's any kind of hardship waiver possible. If you want, you can set up a call separately with us or with a local lawyer where you are located, okay? And I would certainly advise you not to post your information publicly. It just exposes you to unnecessary problems, you know? So just keep it confidential. But as of today, I don't have high hopes for you under the current law. Next question is from Mr. or Ms. Tiwari. Talks about EB1 AOS adjudications are not moving at all. Okay, so what do we do? I think you guys, as a group, should get together and approach the U.S., the USCIS's ombudsman's office. Ombudsman. What's an ombudsman? O, M as in Mary, B as in boy, U, D as in doctor, ombuds, S, M as in Mary, A, N as in Nancy, ombudsman. What in India we call Lokpal is in English called ombudsman. An ombudsman is an office that basically helps consumers resolve problems against an agency or a corporation. So USCIS has an ombudsman's office. You can file an online case. You can write to them as a group and ask them to intervene and see what's going on. In my own knowledge, there is no concerted reason why they are not doing it. I don't see any reason why they shouldn't be processing these cases. Can ELA do something about it? My opinion of ELA's effectiveness in most cases is rather limited because ELA tends to work with the government, not against the government, even though one arm of our organization, does have a litigation practice. But by and large, they tend to handle cases with the government, not against. And also, they tend to get involved in cases that I don't understand how they select. Because many years ago, when we filed a class action lawsuit against the government for delays in adjustment of status, I did not get much support from AILA, despite knocking at their door. So I don't know how they select cases. I'm not sure what can be done other than the ombudsman's office. That's what I would recommend that you do. Okay, next question is from, and let me see if I missed anything. Yep, that's pretty much all they had. Next question is from KML. Applied for I-824 for spouse. She also has an H-1B approval. She's planning to attend H-1B. Question number one. Should she have to carry my GC copy and IA? Does she have to carry my GC copy and I-824? She can. Remember, a pending green card is absolutely no bar to receiving an H-1B. Okay? So typically, just because the green card is going on, consulate should not refuse her H-1B. There is no positive or negative impact of having a green card holding spouse. Once she's here, can I file 485 or continue following to join? You can do both. And I would certainly recommend 485. Next question. I-94 error at the port of entry and out of status. This is Omega123. He says, or she says, I have a visa stamping valid till 15th August 2011 from previous employer. When I came back from India this June, I got a visa for 25th August 2011 only. Okay, now I have been told that I'm out of status from 25th August 2011. Okay. Then I went to the local deferred office to get the U-94 corrected. They can deport us. Okay. All right. We have always sent people to local CBP offices, but as I understand their current policy, they may not, and you're right, they may not correct expired I-94s. So there's really no reason for that policy, but I've heard them say that if the I-94 has expired, we won't correct it. Look, you have to assume the worst-case scenario. If you have been out of status and unlawfully present since 25th August 2011, okay, I would be very hesitant to advise you to continue to stay, because after 180 days from 25th August, you start getting the three-year bar. You will have the three-year bar, and if you continue to stay one more year from 25th August 2011, you'll have a 10-year bar. So you really don't want to take a chance with something like this. I was just checking if the call is being recorded. It is being recorded. So what is the best thing to do? Well, I think what you can do is, you can, this may work, you can contact your congressman's office, explain the problem to them, and tell them, can they help? And if they can contact the CBP and find out for you definitively what the CBP can do. But in any event, you should plan on leaving before the 180 days, well before the 180 days. Okay? But the reason I don't want you to go to CBP personally, because we already know what their policy is. But if a congressman asks them, they may have to be more cautious about how casually they can dismiss people. Okay? So go ahead and do that, but keep in mind that 180-day deadline. Next question is PERF test. Follow new PERM process if company taken over by new management and address changed. I have an approved PERM and I-140. Office location was Woodbridge, New Jersey. I-140 approved. New management came in. The company changed to Bensalem, Pennsylvania, 56 miles. Company name is not changed. Address changed. Well, you know, you could try, again, this is something your lawyer has to decide. You could try filing an amended I-140. I don't like the idea of filing an I-485 because there is something in writing. There is actually a notice, if I remember correctly. I think it came out a couple of years ago from USCIS that says if your I-140 particular change, you have to file an amended I-140 before you can file 485. Okay? So I would definitely want you to do that. As far as AC-21, et cetera, is concerned, my problem is I think they could even question your AC-21 because for an AC-21, a properly approved I-140 should be attached. So if the I-140 needs to be amended, is it really a properly approved? Actually, the language they used is approval when filed. But I think the AC-21 is questionable. I would be very hesitant in just filing the 485. Here's what I would do. I would look at the company's tax returns, the new companies as well as the old companies. The new companies' tax returns are important only from the point from which they took over the old company, and the old company's tax returns are important from the date they filed the perm till the date the new company took over. I would look at both the tax returns. And if I feel that there is a good case that my I-140 amendment will get approved, there are other things also I would look at, like how is the job the same? I also have to argue that 56 miles is normal commuting distance for that area. And I think it's reasonable. I don't think 56 miles is abnormal commuting distance for New Jersey area. So even if the job is in Pennsylvania now, I would still argue that, again, it's got to be studied very carefully. Because if my I-140 is not approvable, I would rather take the AC-21 route and see what happens with that. File my 485. In the meantime, you should consider very seriously filing another PERM application. Consider seriously filing another PERM application, just in case something goes wrong with this. Okay? So I-140, if approvable, should be amended. If not, AC-21, it's I-485 filing. That's a very bold move. I think it can create problems. But if that's the way you want to go and that's what your lawyer is saying, they know the case better than I do, I would probably do that. And at the same time, start another PERM application. Okay? As to whether you can get an RFE, et cetera, all those things are secondary. Of course you can get RFE. Anybody can get an RFE. Will the case succeed? I cannot really tell you that because, once again, the problem is that I-140 needs to be amended according to USCIS's policy. So do what I suggested. Figure out if it can be amended successfully. If not, do what you need to do with the 485, but at the same time, file a second PERM application just to be safe. Thing SS, switching jobs. Total experience, 6 years, 11 months. 5 years, 1 month in the U.S., 1 year, 10 months in India, in the same company. H-1B expires 2013, 6 years over. EB-3 I-140 is approved. Education, BTEC, 4-year degree. Getting a great job opportunity and willing to transfer my H-1B visa to employer B, but A may revoke the I-140. Well, first of all, the current thinking of USCIS is, 6 months ago it was something else, but current thinking of USCIS is, if the old employer revokes the I-140, you cannot take the priority date. It's over. You have to start all over again. Would I be getting 3-year H-1B extension? Yes, you would, as long as the I-140 is not revoked. So even though the I-140 has been approved for employer A, employer B can get a 3-year extension. Can I port the old priority date even though the I-140 is revoked by employer? No. Can employer B start green card process in EB-2? Yes, they can. Yes, they can. NANI 2004, gentleman is actually a client of ours, didn't realize that all he had to do was pick up the phone to talk with me. So as soon as I saw his posting here, I have spoken with him already. So I think all your questions are answered, NANI. We had a conversation already, so I'm not going to answer this question. Next question is Krish 176, reopening of a denied PERM. Now, this gentleman's PERM was denied because there was some problem with the old labor certification, and the lawyer seems to have messed up. Experience skill set was not mentioned in the ETA 9089. Well, The question is, I've got another approval, but can I reopen the old one? And the answer is probably not. We did reopen a very, very old labor certification, almost a 5-6-year-old labor certification. But we had good reason. Three different lawyers had messed up the case completely. So we were able to reopen, explain to the government, not this person's fault. Actually, and this was a Filipino lady who was trying to do everything by the book, but because of the lawyer's mess-ups, her case was completely, completely underwater. So we were able to reopen that case. But it's done in very, very rare cases. I don't think you're going to be able to get your perm approved, especially where the perm is not approvable upon the face of it. In the other cases, what had happened was the application was fine. There was nothing wrong with the labor certification. What had happened was the lawyers had missed some deadlines. They had not filed something on time. So there was nothing wrong with the labor certification itself. In your case, the labor certification itself is problematic. They can't approve it. Okay? So I don't think it's going to help you much. But that's my guess. I haven't seen the case. Ashish 104, H-1B DUI stamping. Okay, sir. If you get a DUI, okay, then the consulate is within its right to put you through a psychiatric testing. When they do psychological or psychiatric testing, they can delay you for many, many days. How many days? 30 to 50? I don't know the answer to that because each consulate is different. How much time their psychologists and psychiatrists are going to take is different. So I don't know if I have a time for you, but you can actually send an email to the consulates. Most of them are very responsive. That's one good thing I've noticed about the consulates. They do respond to emails. Okay, can I do anything in advance to cut down the time, like doing an FBI check? No, that's not going to help you as far as I know. Doesn't hurt, but I don't think it helps. Manish underscore 13, H-1B EAD. Well, it's a very difficult question to answer. If I'm on bench and I'm out of status, can I still file 485 if priority date is current? The answer is yes, if you have been out of status for less than 180 days altogether since the last time you entered USA. Out of status for less than 180 days since the last time you entered USA. If you meet that requirement, you can start working on EAD right away. Also, in case I get RFU on my H-1 extension, can I still file 485 if priority date is current? Again, 180-day rule. That's the answer to all your questions. Minimum number of pay stubs, Mitali Kashyap. Mitali says, I have two questions. Case one, I got a fresh H-1B approved from Company X in first week of October. I have not joined Company X yet. Working on an L-1B with another company, Z, for the last 2 years. I now plan to change jobs. Well, wait a minute. What I would like to know is, when you got the H-1B approval in the first week of October, did you also get a change of status? Because if you got a change of status, then I hate to tell you this, but since October, you have been on H-1, and if you worked on L-1, you probably worked illegally. Okay? So that's even a bigger problem than how many pay stubs do I need from the company who has done my H-1. If the change of status was not approved and merely the H-1 was approved, then you don't need any pay stubs at all from the second company or the company who did your H-1. And you can do the H-1, quote-unquote, transfer without any pay stubs. But if there's a change of status, you have a bigger problem than pay stubs. Next question. If there is an employment gap of 2 to 3 weeks while moving jobs from L-1B to H-1B, will it impact my green card process? Well, first of all, under Section 245K as in KITE, green card process gets affected, or 485 gets affected only if you are out of status for more than 180 days. Okay? And remember, there's two different things, out of status and unlawful present. I'm just talking out of status. For example, you didn't work on H-1B, you didn't get paid. One solution is to go outside USA and come back in, and then all the sins get washed when you come back on a new visa. Okay? You can then apply your 485. So the rule is, if you have been out of status for more than 180 days, you cannot file 485. You can still do consular processing. You can go to your home country, get your green card. No problem. Okay? But I'll warn you about another thing, guys. If an employer is not paying you, it puts into doubt whether they really have a green card job for you. After all, a green card job is a permanent job. If they're not paying you on H-1, are they really going to continue to pay you on green card? So this issue, although not very frequently raised by the government, can be potentially raised. Well, I'm pretty much done with all the questions that were posted. I'm also done with the conversation I wanted to have with you guys about EB-3 and EB-2 jobs. Now, this is what we are going to do. No new questions. Only people who have posted a question earlier. Let me see what button you have to press. Let me just remember. Give me 1 second. I think it's *5. Let's try it. Guys, anybody who has a follow-up question, who has posted a question already on the forums, press *5. Press *5 button on your phones. Oh, yes, it is *5. I see one hand up so far, only one follow-up question. Once again, if you press *5, I will see your request for a follow-up question. Okay, only one person. I'm going to talk with them now. Two questions. Okay, area code 414. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Rajiv. This is Abhilash Tiwari. We talked earlier, and with your help, we got I-140 approved. And I posted 3 questions about the non-movement of EB-1 adjustment of status adjudications, particularly the extraordinary ability.
Are you one of our existing clients?
No, not really. But we talked and we got help from you, if you could remember.
Right. I don't remember, but your name is familiar. Let me tell you one thing.
Yeah.
I think invoking the help of the ombudsman may be the best way to go for you.
Yeah. But my question, first question, I will attract your attention, that why is it happening? Do you feel that what we are observing is true?
I don't recall anybody else from our clients complaining about something like that. So I think it's all working out fine.
Yeah, I don't know, but we were tracking your site and that there is another site. You should track it, and I don't know how relevant their data is. But from that, because our dates are not moving, so we are seeing that EB-2s are getting approved, even EB-1Cs are getting approved. But since August, it is very rare to get any EB-1B or EB-1A on those forums. So that was the reason.
I'm not sure if there is a concerted problem organized problem here. I think let's start you off by having you talk with the ombudsman's office.
Okay.
They have an online system. In fact, we participated in testing that system. It's pretty effective.
I just checked the website, and I think I'll go for it.
Yeah, they're very good. And drop me an email, Tiwari Saab. I am at help.
I have your email. Sure, I'll do that. Thank you so much, Rajiv.
Thanks, sir. Bye-bye.
Yeah, bye.
Okay. Area code 806. Go ahead, please. 806.
Hi, Raju. This is Ram.
Ramji, hi.
I posted a question regarding reopening my previous
labor
certificate. Firm.
Yes, I remember. Tell me.
Yeah. My follow-up question is, if I go for reopening that firm, will it have any impact on my second approved firm or one firm?
My answer, without looking at the two perm applications, is probably not. But if I can compare the two and make sure that there is no lies in the first one, because if the lawyer has messed up other things, has he messed up any other information? As long as there are no lies, misrepresentations, or other discrepancies, I don't see any reason why your second labor search should get affected at all.
Okay. Yeah.
Good luck, Ramsup. Anything else?
I think I'm good, no.
Very good. Good luck to you, sir.
Thanks.
Okay, next question. Area code 979, go ahead, please.
Yes, sir. So I am the person with that incorrect I-94 at the port of entry.
What you should do is, I think, contact your congressman. Have them contact CBP and see what they say.
Yeah, okay, sir. So the university that I work for, they were telling me that we can go for an H-1B extension because my 797 approval notice is valid till April 2012. And we don't have like attorneys really, but they are a group who do all the visa processing for the whole university. And they were saying that we will write a letter explaining what happened to USCIS and ask them to get the extension starting from 26th of August so that way we can minimize the gap.
Let me suggest something to you. This can work, but not for the reason these people are telling you. Actually, what has happened was, a few years ago, 4 or 5 years ago, in a meeting, USCIS actually said this. They said, when you have a situation like this, we will consider the I-94 that came with your H-1 approval to be a good I-94. So in other words, whatever approval we gave you first, even though the later I-94 messed that up, we'll consider the first one to be good enough. Okay?
Okay.
So if you took a copy of the old I-94,
yeah,
and took a copy of the new I-94 and explained the situation and requested them to accept that old I-94 as still good, as per the policy they have been holding on to the last many years, they should give you your I-94 within USA and file your case premium processing. But keep a very sharp eye for 180 days from August when your I-94 expired.
Yeah, okay. We are going with the premium processing.
I think you'll get your I-94 within USA. I have no doubt about that. If you file for an H-1 extension, I think you'll get. But first, remember to send your old I-94 with it. The I-94
okay.
That came with the original petition approval, send that in.
Okay. Yeah, I will let that. That's a good point. Okay. And assuming my H-1B approval is denied and I leave the country immediately, I have the 797 approval till April 2012.
You can go get a visa stamping and come right back.
Okay, that's fine.
Okay?
Okay, sir. Yeah, thank you.
Don't lose any sleep over it. This will get corrected.
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
Good luck.
Yeah, thanks.
Okay, guys, it looks like people who had posted are done. *5, anybody who has any question, *5, and I will start answering questions in the order people logged into the conference call. Press *5. So far, only one question, two, three questions, four questions. Okay. Four people have their questions. *5 if you have a question. Let me get started. First one, you don't have an area code, but you are the first person who logged into the conference call at 1:47 p.m. I'm assuming you're calling from either Skype or voice over IP. Say hello.
Hi, Rajiv. Hi.
Hi, Rajiv here. Yeah, go ahead, please.
Hi.
Yes, sir.
Yes. This is regarding I-824 I file. So my question is, what are the documents they might ask her? And
So you already posted a question. This is about your...
Yeah, I already posted. I don't know. I pressed *5, but I couldn't get connected. So this time I pressed
your
it again.
Your wife is doing following to join, and you are asking, with the I-824, what papers can the consulate ask for the H-1? Is that what you're asking?
Yes, she's going for H-1 interview, yes. Because I filed I-84, I have GC. What are the documents they might ask?
I don't think they'll focus so much on what you have filed. I would be surprised if they focus too much on that. I think their primary focus is going to be what kind of job she's going to be doing. That's common for all H-1 people these days. H-1 visas have become extremely difficult.
Yeah, because she has in-house projects, she does them client project. Which one is preferable?
She has what? I'm sorry?
She has in-house project, and also she's trying for a client project. So which one is better to go for the interview?
In-house project is better, as long as it is well documented.
Okay, that is related to ERP, okay.
Yep.
And another question is, I-824 is filed at Texas, and it's more than 3 months. Any idea how long it might take? Because the tense, is there any way to expedite it?
Are you talking about the 824, sir?
Yes.
Their processing times are on their website. I don't recall what they are, but if I remember, they are 6 months plus right now.
Yes, right now they are showing March, but is it realistic or it's a tentative?
It's tentative. It can be more, it can be a little bit less, but usually it's a little bit more.
Okay.
Okay.
Is there a way to, you know, expedite once IA24 is approved? Is there a way to get things done?
Here is the interesting thing. There may not be a way to expedite this, but there is something called attorney-certified I-140. Attorney-certified I-140. Very recently, I had a reason to, or I have come to know that certain consulates in India might accept attorney-certified I-140 instead of waiting for the 824 to come. So have your lawyer send an email to the consulate saying that, look, she's been waiting and, you know, this family is separated. As you know, 824s are, you know, 8 months backed up. Can you please accept attorney-certified I-140 for a derivative whose primary has already gotten his green card? They might. And what that does is your lawyer will send a certified copy of your return. They'll say, I certify this is a true copy from my records. They'll send a copy of the I-140 approval. The consulate will bypass 824. They'll bypass New Hampshire visa processing. They'll directly call her for interview. That could be wrapped up within a month or two or three at the most.
So this is at Chennai. So any idea?
I'm pretty sure Chennai said that they will accept it.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Oh,
I know Chennai
so
is not
much,
known for its kindness, but in this particular instance, I'm pretty sure it was Chennai who said they will accept attorney-certified I-140. I was quite surprised, actually.
Oh, okay. Okay, so they accept the certified I-140.
Attorney-certified I-140. Check with them.
Okay.
Even you can send them an email if your lawyer won't.
Okay. I can do it myself?
Why not? Say my wife is stuck there and I have filed 824 for her. Sir, can you accept an attorney-certified 824 because we've been separated for X number of months and 824 is going to still take so many more months. Can you accept attorney-certified I-140?
Okay. Thank you so much, Rajiv. So I was not aware of this. Okay.
I think that you're sick and tired of being by yourself, right?
Yes. It's been more than a year or two.
You should try it.
No idea of like when it's going to get, so now I'm counting days.
No, try it. Maybe this will work, okay?
Okay, thank you so much.
You're welcome, sir. Good luck. Okay, we have, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4 calls only. So let's go on to the next one. Area code 414, go ahead, please.
Rajiv, sorry, this is a follow-up, not a new question. Just asking, would it be good to contact congressmen if we cannot contact the ombudsman as a group?
Why I think this might be a little bit better with an ombudsman. This is a largely discretionary matter.
Okay.
So ombudsman, because they report back to Congress. If USCIS is messing up and, you know, so it'll be in the ombudsman's report. I don't know if I'm right, but that's my feeling. It might be a little bit better off with the ombudsman.
But I can contact as a person also, as an individual, if I could not, mobilize the group.
Oh, yes. But the reason I said everybody in the group should file an independent complaint and you can cross-reference each other, the advantage is then they know it's a real problem. It's a systemic problem.
Okay, great. And there is one question, is the 4 months period counted from the day of I-140 approval for EB-1s or from the day of concurrent filing?
It should be from the day of concurrent filing.
Yeah, because I filed in January and they allowed me to raise the service request. So I believe so.
I'm not sure. That's a good question. I would suspect it's from concurrent filing.
Okay, Rajiv. Thank you so much. Thanks for your help.
Good luck, sir. Bye-bye.
Yeah, bye.
Okay, 2, 3, 4, 5. A few more questions. All right. No problem. Area code 914. Go ahead, please. Area code 914. 613. You may be calling from India. You have too many digits here on the 914. No, it's USA only. 914-623. Hello? Speak up. Okay, I'll leave you open. Next question, area code 201. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Raji. 201-67. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
My question is about a follow-up on the amended I-140. I'll be eligible to file the 485 next month. However, I've been working for my current company. I haven't changed anything. However, my company, we moved 10 miles. The address has...
How many miles?
10.
How many miles did they move?
110.
You don't need an amendment. You're fine.
So I should be fine just filing the 485?
Yeah, you just file 485 because... See, you are definitely within normal commuting distance. I'm pretty sure, again, you can have your lawyers double-check that memo that I'm talking about. There's something that USCIS gave out in writing. I'm pretty sure you don't need to amend.
The thing is, though, from my house, both the old office and the new are pretty much like 5.5 miles. It's
see,
from the
after
old Karka, office.
It doesn't matter where your house is.
Okay.
That's of concern. But where the job is of concern. And... since the job is so close, even if it was 20, 30 miles, and the employer is the same, the job is the same, I don't see any problem. Same I-140 should be good, but double check it because you have time. We still want to make sure that we're not messing anything up. Okay?
Okay, cool. I'll do that. Thank
I'm
you.
Pretty sure you're going to be fine.
Okay, cool. Thank you.
Good luck. Okay, two more questions left. Area code 914, are you back or no? Okay, area code 404. Go ahead, please. 404-200.
Hi, Raju. This is Sai for GC.
Oh, hi, Sai. Oh, my God. You're an old one. I know you. You're almost there in every conference call that I've done. How are you?
Yeah, in these days, I was not there.
Yeah. But what's going on? Tell me.
Yeah, I have a couple questions regarding
sure.
mine. Mm-hmm. Okay, one thing, my son is age 14. So
okay.
to get his SSN, they're asking to get an EAD because I moved to EAD.
Okay.
So can I apply for him if he's 14 years?
Absolutely. What you do is, where does the place for sign? I think 14-year-old can sign for himself. Double check that. It should be on the instructions on the form. Otherwise, you can call the INS customer service.
Okay.
If I think 14, you can sign. He can sign for himself. But if he cannot, you can always sign. And you can sign his name or sign your own name, say, father signing on behalf of minor son.
Okay.
Okay. No problem.
And
you can apply for his EAD.
Okay. And the other questions, one is, as I'm here. And
by the way, let me also tell you something else. Why do you need his SSN?
Because for my other son, who is in college now, we experience a lot of problem with other things without having social security. So I'm preparing his... first.
You can actually ask the SSA whether they will issue, because remember, a social security number can be issued even if they don't have an EAD, if there is a valid non-work-related reason why you need the SSN.
Right, I went there, but they gave me a paper saying that, you know, he's not eligible for SSN.
Okay, well, you can get the EAD, it's not a problem.
Okay, and the other question, I'm here like since almost 10 years and I'm stuck with EB3. So if mm-hmm. I plan to go back as my 485 is there, as of now I'm working on EAD. So if I go back to India, can I transfer or convert my case into a consular processing if I wish?
You can, but you know, here's the problem. If somebody has a permanent job in USA that they are getting a green card based upon, then they move to India, I would question it. How come right. there is a permanent job and you are roaming around here in India?
Okay.
Okay.
I got you. So
I would be concerned about that part. I think a better thing to do is, and this may sound stupid, finish a master's degree and convert your case to EB2. You're still better off.
Okay. Yeah, I already started, took the admission this month.
Yeah, make sure it's a proper degree. Don't get it, you know, from a postal, you know.
Yeah, I searched for a local brick
sure
and mortar university. And,
exactly.
It's not like
don't
other.
Do it from tribal university.
No.
Okay.
It's already a long time for me, Raju, staying here, so I don't take that kind of chance.
Good. Good to talk
and,
to you, Sai. Good luck.
Thank you. And the other thing is that recently sure. they raised the RFE for my wife for medicals. In fact, she already gone through that radiology test for TB, at the time.
Was she going to have a baby when she first went in?
No, we already gone through, because she got like 5 mm. So they asked us to go for radiology and all
that. That's X-ray.
Yes, X-ray, and we did it. But okay. The doctor forgot to put the checkbox check, and they send an RFE saying that we are missing the information about radiology tests, so you can send it. So when I went to the doctor with all the file which I have already with me, so
right.
She took all of them, and she took extra vaccination, which is missing. And she
right.
put same things, and she filled out the form and sent it back to them.
Did
so
she
is that okay?
Did she seal it again?
Yeah, she sealed it and everything she
yeah,
gave
Yeah, if
me.
It is resealed, yeah, we've done it before. Sometimes doctors forget to do something. We go back, tell them to redo it, and then reseal it and send it back as a response to the RFE. No problem.
Okay, but in the letter they mentioned to do radiology, but doctor told me there's no need of doing because you
already. It's
already
done.
It.
I mean, why expose her to more radiation?
Okay, so that's one thing. And the other thing, they told 60 to 90 days they will let us know, but it's already past like 6 months.
Yeah, it doesn't hurt to contact customer service, see what's going on.
That's it? Okay, yeah. Should I be aware
now
of
Now open
anything?
A service request, see what the customer service is doing.
Okay. And you already explained regarding the EB3 to EB2 conversion.
Right. You have a fairly good idea of what is involved here.
I'm a 3-year degree plus PGDCA. So if I want to talk more on that, can I take an appointment? For
you know, you may want to talk to, let me think about this. You have a PGDCA, you said?
Yeah, PGDCA, but out of all examinations, one examination I was absent. I came to U.S. in 2000.
No, no, then don't waste your money on me. I'm not going to be able to give you any better advice than what I just did. If you don't have, if you have an unfinished degree, even if it is one credit missing, it's not a degree. Mm. It's not
okay. The other one, I have PGDCA, which is computer applications. But this is from Lakotia Computers. So is it helpful?
It is from a private organization.
Yeah, private.
And must you have a bachelor's degree before you go into the diploma?
Right.
Worth looking into. Here's what you may want to do. The company we use is TrustFort. There are many companies around. You mm-hmm. can contact them and ask them if this diploma can be evaluated along with the bachelor's degree.
Okay.
Worth looking into. And if they say yes, it can be equivalent, then you make an appointment to talk with me.
Okay, but I did an evaluation with the WES, which they call it a reputed company.
No, I'm sorry. I have never, I think TrustFort is the one to go to, okay?
Okay, all right. Yeah, the 2 years back, my previous employer who filing for EB3, before doing that, they went to the TrustFort for a complete evaluation, and I sent all of the documents to them, but...
Okay, see, the problem is, you know what, just go ahead and make an appointment for a consultation with me. I will explain to you, it's a certain way it has to be done. It's not just any evaluation.
Okay.
Okay? So go ahead and make an appointment. We'll talk more about this.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you.
Good luck to you. All right. Yeah. Bye-bye. I have two more questions left. One is from area code 215. Go ahead, please, 215.
Hi. Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon, sir.
Yeah, my 485 is under process for me and my family. I have a small question about my wife.
Okay, your voice is fading in and out. So far, I've followed what you said, but be mindful of that. Go ahead.
Okay, yeah, okay. She came here to the U.S. on H-1B in March 2007.
Okay.
But she did not take up the job, and she left the country in June 2007, and she was not on payroll. So because now that she's dependent on me and her 485 is under process now. So will that make any trouble for me?
Okay, wait. She is your dependent. And what did she do that you're worried about? I'm sorry, I didn't catch that problem.
Because I filed 485 for her and myself and my family, all my family.
Okay.
Because I will have to include the last 5 years' information in the biography sketch. I had to write that she was here in U.S. for 3 months. She did not. But then I briefly wrote she was not. She did not. She resigned to the job, and not was on payroll. Left the country.
That's so you are saying that she was 3 months out of status.
No, she came on H-1B, but she did not take up the job. I don't know whether it is.
Okay.
Out of status.
So well, this can create a problem, but not for you.
Okay.
Normally. The problem can be that if somebody didn't join the job, USCIS can look at the intention with which she entered. If she entered USA intending not to join, they can consider that to be a fraudulent entry.
Okay.
Okay, and that can create a whole bunch of problems. Mm-hmm. But if it's just merely out of status, there's no problem for her. And in either case, there should be no problem for you unless you were engaged in some kind of a conspiracy to smuggle her into USA, which you were not.
No,
I don't see any problem for you.
Okay, but what about her, like?
Her, you know, again, I would have to talk with her to understand exactly what happened. As long as she didn't have a preconceived intention to not work at all and just enter on H-1, I don't think there's a problem. But if she entered thinking, well, I'm not going to work, I'm just going to enter using my H-1, then you could have a problem.
No, she came with all intention of doing the job.
And there is no issue at all, nothing to worry about. If it's only less than 180 days, no problem.
Okay, yeah. Okay, thank you very much. Yeah.
Good luck. Okay, this is the last question I have, and we still have 10 minutes left. So if you guys have any other questions, there's still a few people on the phone. Press *5 on your phone, *5. Okay, I'm taking the last question. Again, this is not looks like a voice over IP. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, hi, Rajiv. This is Manish here.
Hello, Manish. How are you?
Yeah, hi. I posted a question, but somehow I couldn't understand. You mentioned about out-of-state, if I'm on bench. My H-1 is expiring end of January 2012. And you mentioned that
your question
was,
can I file I-485, right?
Yeah, can I file 485 if I'm out-of-state?
And the answer is, if you have been out-of-status for 180 days or more, okay, you cannot file 485.
But the 180 days, I can file.
Yes, less than 180 days, you can file, no problem at all. But it does make me doubt whether the job is a permanent job. If they cannot have, you know, if they cannot keep you employed, really, how can they keep you employed on green card?
All right. Mm-hmm.
That does create an issue.
Within those 6 months, if I get the EAD,
I would do is, if I were you, I would file this and start looking for another job. After 180 days, just join another job.
But within those 180 days, if my PD is current and if I get the EAD, that should be fine, right?
It is fine. Yeah, you use the EAD. Absolutely.
Okay. So I have 180 days from the day my H-1 expires or the day I stop working?
No, these are two different 180 days. One period of 180 days prior to filing the 485 makes you eligible or not eligible to file the 485.
Okay.
Once you file the 485 and it has been pending 180 days, you can quit this employer and take a similar job anywhere.
Okay.
That's called AC-21. Now, there's a lot more to it. There's a lot more to it. Go to my blog and read up. I've got no less than 30 pages of information on this issue. Good information. Read it very, very carefully. I think you'll be well educated. And then you can ask specific questions of your lawyers.
Okay. Okay.
Because there is a way that you might be able to leave even earlier than 180 days. But read up on this.
Okay. Sure.
Okay.
Okay. Thanks.
Good luck. You're welcome. Thanks. Bye-bye. Okay. Now, all of a sudden, I have three more questions. No problem. My neighborhood, area code 301. Go ahead, please.
Is it 301?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, hi. I work for federal government here in Washington, D.C., and the government filed an EB-1A application for me. Which is I-140, and that got approved sometime in August. And this application was filed as a concurrent application in April first week. So I wanted to basically know, I didn't know about anything like any processing because this was filed by government, so I didn't look into the actual processes. But now because my 485 is pending for such a long time, I want to know how is the basic processing done for a concurrent file?
Well, basically, when did you say it was filed?
April first week, I think 6th April or 4th April.
Of last year?
No, this year, 2011.
This year. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's not... See, my guess was that the concurrent filing times are counted from the date of the filing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
In other words, the 485 pendency begins on the date of the filing. But I'm not quite sure about it. Honest to tell the truth, I haven't looked into this issue for a while.
So even though...
I think your best bet is, let me explain to you what you should do.
Uh-huh.
Your best bet is, pick up the phone and call the U.S. customer service, USCIS customer service.
Mm-hmm.
This is such basic information that they should have it. Unfortunately, the customer service is often, as often inaccurate as they're accurate, okay? But
yeah.
Because this is basic information, they should be able to give it to you.
Yeah, but what happens is I called them twice, actually. They said that it's under processing, and I think the official date when they are processing the cases is still around March last week. That's
okay.
Why they can't say that when this, they said you still have to give some time because it's April 1st week when this 485 was filed.
Okay.
So what I was assuming is that it would be processed simultaneously, yeah, both 140.
No, simultaneously doesn't mean at the same time. They have different processing times. I-140
okay.
could be 3 months, 485 could be 10 months.
Okay, so
concurrent processing simply means they are being worked on simultaneously, but doesn't mean they'll be decided simultaneously.
Okay, so that at least that part is very sure that they would have started working on 485 from the day it was filed.
That is my belief.
Okay.
Okay.
So there's no point in raising a service request also, isn't it? Because it's still under the normal processing time.
If it is still under normal processing time,
yeah.
I don't see any point in raising a service request. Once that time is exceeded, then you can.
And one last question. Do you think
sure.
raising a service request would help? Or because I'm reading online, it says that sometimes it messes up.
I have never known it to mess anything up. There is
okay.
as many rumors as there is truth on the Internet.
Okay, so there's no problem. As soon as I'm within the timelines for...
I have never known anything. There's always surprises, but to the best of my knowledge, there's no problem.
Okay, thank you so much, Sam.
You're welcome. Good luck.
Thanks.
Okay. Oh, some people actually logged off and then came back in again. Okay, three more questions left. Let's start with same person with voiceover IP logged in at 1:47 p.m. Sir, go ahead. I think you have the one.
One more question.
Yeah.
For AC, attorney certified I-140, do you need to have original I-40 because I don't have it?
No. What they do is your lawyers will certify that it's a copy from their records.
Okay.
That's the whole idea. AC means attorney certified. So if it's the original, then, you know, there's no issue. But normally what they do is they take a copy. But, you know, again, double check with the consulate what they need. They'll tell you.
Okay. Okay.
Okay.
What is the time frame you said for this process, Rajiv?
It could be just a few months, 2-4 months.
Oh, okay.
So better clean up the house?
Yep.
All right, good luck.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Okay, area code 914. All right, still unavailable. Area code, two more questions left. Two more left, 425, go ahead. Area code 425.
Hi, Rajiv.
Hello.
Hi. I filed my green card under AB1C in April, on April 12th, to be precise. And my I-140 got approved on August 17th. And seeing the USCIS processing times, my 485 seems to be outside the processing time frame. And I have raised an SR and got back a response that it's waiting to be assigned to an officer.
Okay.
So I'm not sure what exactly that means and when does it get assigned to an officer?
That means Merry Christmas. There are too many people on leave right now. They don't have enough officers.
Wow.
That's the best.
Okay, so what about from August onwards, right? So I call them exactly after, you know, 4 months processing time is done. So all these days had been working days, right? So do you think it's just that lack of enough people?
I'm actually kidding. I think what has happened is some of the priority dates have moved fast. So I don't know what exactly the workload situation is, but obviously what this means is there are more cases than there are officers.
And another observation I've seen on the internet or track it is many people who have applied in August, June, July, they are getting their 485s approved, and whereas mine is filed concurrently in April and I'm still pending. So what is that?
There have been litigations against this kind of behavior, and the courts have consistently held there is no right to first in, first out.
So is that to the will and wish of the USCIS officers? They can pick up any application and process it.
Welcome to USA. Yep.
Okay. All right.
Good luck.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Last question of the day, guys. Last question from area code 973.
Hi, Raji.
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm a student on F1, and I just applied for my OPT, and I have two questions on this. Firstly, my I-20 going to expire on December 22nd this year, 2011.
Okay.
And my OPT start date is on February 10th. So my new OPT I-20 is from February 2012.
Okay.
So in between this 1 month, my status is like, what is, like, it's like...
I don't think there should be a problem, but what I do want to do is I want you to contact your international student's office.
All right.
Go there, explain to them the problem.
Okay.
Whatever they say, write it down, the date and the time, and the person you talked with.
Okay, okay.
Okay, I don't think it's going to be a problem, but just do this. This is just in case there is an issue raised sometime in the future. We can then say that, you know, hey, Mr. USCIS, our International Students Office speaks on your behalf. This is what he told us.
All right, okay.
But make sure you note down the same day that you have a conversation, note down the date, the time, and the person you spoke with and what they said.
Okay, all right. Okay, and one more question is, can I travel? I can't travel in between when my OPT status is pending, or can I?
Can you travel when? After you get your OPT?
No, before. Before if there's an emergency, because I need to go in January. So.
I believe there is a frequently asked question,
oh,
a set of frequently asked questions on the ICE website.
Okay.
Okay, and... if that does not answer your question adequately, go ahead and contact Leslie in our Stanton office.
Leslie.
Tell her, Rajiv said, I'm a student and that you don't charge students for a consultation and that I was in a conference with him and he told me to call him back. And you can confirm this with Rajiv. Just say that I need a consultation with him. So set up a call if your questions are not adequately answered.
Okay. All right. I'll definitely.
Okay.
Thank you.
But there's a very, very nice frequently asked questions done by ICE on this. I really like it. So it's on the ICE page. It's not on USCIS.
Okay, okay.
But if you go to ICE, they have a page for frequently asked questions from students where all the questions of travel have been addressed very nicely. It's funny. I would expect the page to be either on CBP, which is the one who sits at the border at the airport, or USCIS, but it's actually ICE who has all the answers.
Okay, okay.
Okay.
And I have thank you. And I have one more last question. Actually,
sure.
It's behalf of my friend. His OPT is gonna expire by next year. I mean, coming February 2012.
Okay.
And if he applies for H-1 in February, and if the status is pending, can he work or he can't?
Yes, because if somebody's OPT expires after, he could have a problem. You said February, right?
Yeah, February 2012.
So his actually OPT expires before the April 1st date, right?
Right, right.
No, he can't continue to work. Because if it expired on April 2nd also, and he got his paperwork filed on April 1st, he could continue working till October. But yeah, exactly. People whose OPT expires before April 1st don't have that benefit.
Oh, okay.
Either he's got to do that 15 or 17-month extension, or... Yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead. It's already...
Or he had to have filed that H-1 in the prior year's quota.
Oh, okay, okay. If it's open,
I think he's stuck with a bad situation.
Yeah, right. All right.
And
okay,
by the way, the same page that you go to also has this information as well.
Oh, okay. I'll check that.
Gap and all, how it applies, how people who whose OPT expires before the cap kick in, they are out of luck. All of this is there.
Okay. All right. I'll check that. Thanks a lot. Thank you.
Good luck, sir. Bye-bye. All right, folks. Good conference call. Thank you for being here. I'll see you in 2 weeks.